Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at Lars and the Real Girl, directed by Craig Gillespie. Returning on the show today to talk about Lars and the Real Girl is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So this is, I mean, obviously with a story like this, where it's about a guy who falls in love with a blow-up doll, it's going to be a very odd, bizarre movie. That's almost a given. But it's a good-natured movie, and it's almost, in a way, pretty sweet. Like, it walks a fine line between it being sleazy because it's a blow-up doll, but it's also very good-hearted. And I think that's what I liked about the movie. Like, at any point, it could get, like, go for the crass jokes, go for the rude jokes. And it doesn't do that at all. And I thought that was what made this movie really interesting.
Yeah, you think it's going to be about a blow-up doll and some sort of perversion. And instead, it's about a community and how you pull together and recognize each other's weaknesses and give each other a break.
It is like about the whole community just, it's all about like, you know, accepting people for who they are. Like, at the, you know, at the scene when they're talking about it in the church, repairing everybody, like, okay, he's probably going to bring this doll in the church. And, you know, initially people are like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. You know, we are not doing this, that kind of thing. But then the one woman says, look, we all got weird stuff on our lives. You know, you do this, you do
right,
that.
Your cousin dresses up as cats.
Yeah. We all have our weird things.
Somebody, your son sends money to that UFO club. Yeah.
So he has his weird thing. You know, what's the big deal? He's not hurting anybody. I think that was showing how accepting the community was of him.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if it really was like that everywhere? Yeah. Instead of saying, oh, this very obvious thing that we can condemn and feel good about ourselves, but instead going to, well, what can we do? How can we be helpful? Yeah.
So do you think, as I know the main criticism people have of this movie is that there's no way a town would be that accepting, that there would be people like, ew, get away from us, you freak. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, somebody would try to be funny and, I don't know, rip the head off the doll. And they're like, we killed her brutally or something, you know, something like that to mess with him or make him feel bad. Do you think that would be more realistic or?
That certainly sounds like it would be more realistic. But I think the movie, in a way, is sort of like how people think of small towns, even though that's not really what small towns are like, where everybody knows your business. But they also know your business to know when you're really a threat to society and when you're just maybe damaged. And you would hope that they would pull together for you in the way they do in this movie. I love how, you know, you think all of your expectations are completely dashed. Like the idea that you would have to hide the doll's reality from children because they wouldn't understand when, you know, they let her read to the kids with the books that read themselves. See, kids would love that. Kids would think a doll reading to them was awesome.
And they wouldn't have any idea about what that doll is really for.
Right. You know? Actually, when they purchased that doll, by the way, they made sure to order it without any body parts that could be used sexually. So to avoid the idea that, well, it's a blow-up doll, it wasn't completely anatomically correct, despite that scene where Emily Mortimer tells her friends, she's one of the girls.
And I think a lesser film, a lot of other comedies, I think would have gone in that direction with the gross-out humor. Like, a Rob Schneider or an Adam Sandler, or like when you talked earlier about the Wayans doing that 50 Shades of Black movie. Those are the kinds of comedians. Easy jokes. Like, there'd be jokes where, like, we have to clean it up. And it's like, it's after he's had sex with it. Like, oh, God, and there'd be gross out.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, the fact that they are caring for her and giving her a bath and everything. Yeah, it's not because she's dirty or because it's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And what I think's really sweet about the movie is how they use this opportunity, everybody who knows him, to care for him. You know, like the women taking her to get her hair, you know, styled and getting her that job as a mannequin again. What a great.
That was a funny.
Hilarious. And just, I don't know, it's just so very kind. And the doctor, of course, I think steals the movie, Patricia Clarkson.
It is all about people trying to help him as a way of being nice to Bianca.
Yes.
And the scene when Mortimer sort of flips out at him for being, you know, angry that Bianca is doing all this stuff and never spending enough time with them and that they don't really care about her. Is like, we're doing all of this for you.
For you.
We wouldn't be doing any of this if you weren't in love with her. And I think that's just sort of saying, we're doing all this for you so you can get better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great scene. And there's, I think there's another really powerful scene where he's talking to his brother about, you know, what it means to be a good man. Mm-hmm. And his brother gives him this wonderful speech about how he bailed after their father just sort of fell apart after their mother died, how his dad was just too sad. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was, for me, the moment in the movie where you realize why Lars is the way he is. You know, he was raised by a man who was just broken by his tragedy. And you can see how Lars would grow up to be very insular and sort of try to take care of his own self and never ask for anything, go move in the garage when his brother gets married and not think, you know, he's being put upon at all. Just such a gentle person, kind of.
Yet very withdrawn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's very, if there's, I would say that this is a great example of like a character study movie, because Gosling is the main character, and throughout the entire movie, we're learning more and more about what, you know, why he is the way he is, and, you know, why, you know, we think, well, how could somebody be that delusional as to think this blow-up doll's a real person? And you figure out why he thinks that, and it's all about, you know, whether it's the sessions he has with the doctor, played by Patricia Clarkson, or when he's learning about his brother, and, like, even that, what I liked about that scene, he's talking about what it means to be a man, and at the end he says, sometimes you just gotta do the things you know, you got to do the right thing, even if it really hurts the most. Mm-hmm. And that's when he starts to, you know, get the idea that Bianca has some disease and she's dying, meaning that he's ready to put this aside. And you think deep down he knows it's, you know, knows she's just a doll, that, you know, by killing her off, you know, he can finally move on and get back to be more outgoing, I guess, or social.
And yet the doll works in ways that work when it's real people. His character becomes more confident because he has, you know, a girlfriend. He can go to parties now, which he would never do before, and show her off, and he can, you know, take her places and do things. So he grows as a person. That scene where he does the CPR on the bear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome scene. That was not in the script, by the way. He sort of improvised that on the fly. But that was a wonderful little scene.
Mm-hmm. And even the scene, like, when he's at the party and the Talking Heads music's playing, and he's just kind of dancing by himself, but he's imagining that he's with Bianca, even though you have Bianca in the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And I like about the humor in the movie. Like, obviously, with a film like this, you're going to have the, you know, what the heck, going to be a lot of double take moments from the community. And that part's held funny. Like, the one part that got me laughing the most is when the girl that likes him in the office, Margot, you know, she's always trying to ask him out, and he's always been coy about it. And then he goes to church because she sings in the choir in the church. He goes to church and brings the blow-up doll with him. And she's just looking like a complete shock. And that part had me going. But it's like they do that all in the beginning of the movie. And then after that, no more of those what the heck jokes or anything. And I think that's good. If they kept milking it, I think it would have just gotten too repetitive and it just wouldn't be funny anymore. And it would have taken away from the point of the movie. But I thought they had the right amount of humor.
And they didn't make it seem like everybody was on board. You know, there were the people who, you know, made the comments, and the guys that work with his brother who have to give him a hard time about it. And I love the scene where Lars's brother and sister-in-law are talking to the doctor, and she's saying, yeah, you basically got to go along with it. And the brother says, and everybody is going to laugh at him, and she says, and you.
Yep.
Like, yeah, this is going to be hard, and actually they're going to laugh at you too, and you're going to have to somehow deal with that. She plays that role so well. She's so wise.
Mm-hmm. And even you can understand with her character a little bit, because she gives a little bit of her backstory, that she's in a way kind of similar to Lars. She's nowhere near as, like, you know, that far down as he is, but, you know, she lost a family member. She's had to deal with some of the problems he's had to deal with. I think that's sort of why she has this connection with him, is able to reach to him.
Yeah, there's also an interesting character development in that you find out that he actually finds it painful to have people touch him. Mm-hmm. And the doctor actually tries to work with that. But, you know, if that was your situation, a blow-up doll makes perfect sense. They don't randomly touch you for no reason. You know, it's all initiated by you.
Yeah, exactly. And even that the you know, in the end of the movie, when we're seeing that he's sort of, you know, overcoming this, and he goes on the bowling date with Margot, and he shakes her hand, he takes his glove off and shakes her with his actual mm-hmm. hand. So seeing that, he's becoming, you know, he's not as adverse to having people touch him.
Yeah, he's changed in mm-hmm. a way, which is, you know, and ironically, you know, Bianca helped him do that. Mm-hmm. I love the scene in the early in the movie, though, when he goes over to tell his brother and sister-in-law that he's having a guest. Mm-hmm. And, oh, how did you meet? Oh, on the internet. Oh, everybody's doing that now. Mm-hmm. And that she's in a wheelchair. Oh, that's okay. And then cut, and then you see them, and there's the doll in the wheelchair or sitting there, looking very trashy, mm-hmm. and like an inert being. And they say, "How do we? What do you do? What do you say?"
It just it's very similar because he orders this online. And I get, you know, they actually talked about how the screenwriter, she said, Nancy Oliver, she said she found a website a lot like the one that's mm-hmm. shown in the film, where you can order these dolls, make them anatomically correct. Mm-hmm. You can have them to your hairstyle, your preferred eye color, even skin color, probably anything you want. And it's kind of, it reminds me a bit of her, as this one is, the technology is not the main point of the movie, yes, but it is kind of showing how technology affects relationships. Like in Her, is a story of a guy who falls in love with his like a Siri robot kind right. of thing. Like he has it on an app on his phone, and she talks in the voice of Scarlett Johansson, and they connect and they fall in love. This one, he's able to use internet technology to give the blow up doll exactly to his specifications, and that makes it fall in love with the blow up doll. So a little bit of similarities I saw between this movie and Her.
You know, I hadn't put that together before, but you're right. There is sort of a projection. Mm-hmm. And the idea that this person, entity, is somehow the amalgamation of all of your wants and needs and can respond to that without any mm-hmm. needs or wants of their own.
And even in another Gosling movie, which was the latest Blade Runner movie, the relationship he has with this hologram woman that, you know, is like a personal assistant to you or something, and they fall in love. And, you know, once again, very kind of similar to how technology is affecting relationships.
And I love how, obviously, he's got a whole conversation going on in his head, too. Mm-hmm. You know, he's getting in the car. Why are you yelling?
Yeah, I love, and even the part where, you know, they take her to see the doctor for the first time, and they're in the waiting room. And then they come out, and one of the kids is sitting on her lap. It's just a great amount of humor in this movie.
Yeah, it really does have some wonderful moments of humor. Mm-hmm. And I also think that the scenes that they show in the office is just like everybody's office. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy who plays his music too loud and makes the jokes and, you know, mm-hmm. the rivalry between him and...
Yeah, the petty office rivalries. Yeah. It almost feels a little bit like, you know, The Office or something.
I also liked the scene where at the bowling alley where... Kelly Garner, who's the love interest, really, Margot. Mm-hmm. She, you know, Lars makes it clear, you know, I would never cheat on Bianca. And she's like, oh, no. No, I wouldn't either. And you realize, you know, these are just like decent people. You hardly ever see a movie mm-hmm. about decent people.
Yeah. Like this movie, as far as optimism, has a lot of faith in people and
yes.
humanity and communities. You know, we wouldn't just be like, get away from me, get away from me, you freak or anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll play along with it. You know, it's all about you getting better, you know, something like that.
Right, and also not saying something like, yeah, but she's a blow-up doll. No one says that to him.
Well, his
brother
does.
Tells him. He tries, but he doesn't really hear mm-hmm. it. Yeah.
And I think this movie, to me, is all Ryan Gosling in the movie. Mm-hmm. I think, yes, we could talk – we'll talk later a little bit about the director, Craig Gillespie, but if there's a takeaway from this movie, it's Gosling's performance, I think. I mean, because obviously you're thinking, a guy that looks like Ryan Gosling, why would he even need a blow-up doll? I mean, all the women would be throwing themselves at him. They love – all the women think Ryan Gosling's hot. But he plays this character so well that you can see why he is the way he is, and – Even if he has the looks of a Ryan Gosling, he still has problems with relationships.
Yeah, which I think also it was a great second movie for me to watch of his after The Notebook, because The Notebook is so over the top, mm-hmm. romantic and sentimental yeah. and all those things. And this is not.
No.
This is much more realistic in a way.
Definitely.
And it's about a character who is much more layered.
Yeah, there's a lot more layers and... My biggest problem with The Notebook was that movie was just predictable from the very beginning. You could see where everything was going, happening a mile away. This movie, it's very unpredictable. You don't necessarily know how it's going to go. And even at the end, you don't know how long you're going to keep the charade up, or if somebody's mm-hmm. going to, you know, I kept thinking somebody was just going to do something funny with the blow-up doll, like, you know, take its head off or its arm or something.
And I like how they get carried away, too. Call 911. Then she calls 911. Well, I don't know what to do. I mean, what do you do when the thing that's not alive looks like it's dying?
And they even have a whole funeral for it.
Yes.
And they dress in black and they bury it.
You know, they had, they treated the doll itself like a regular actor. Mm-hmm. It had its own, trailer. And they left her in there unless she was on, you know, the scene. Mm-hmm. You know, they dressed her privately. And that helped Ryan Gosling stay in character, which I think that's kind of an interesting detail. There are also like 9 different dolls.
Yeah, I read about that. And they kind of make her look different. I noticed that she looked a lot different throughout the movie.
Yeah. Not a whole lot different.
But you could tell.
Yeah, you could tell.
Because another one scene I like is with the beginning. And Ellie Mortimer is dressing her up, and then she kind of touches her lips, and she like, is that lipstick?
Yeah, and I like the scene early on where, someone stole her luggage. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to angle for his sister-in-law to give her some clothes, and sister-in-law's like, well, I don't think we're, you know, the same. Oh, she doesn't care about stuff like that. She's not shallow that way. And of course, she's thinking, I don't want some blow up doll wearing my clothes, but you can't say that.
Yeah, yeah.
But as the audience, we totally understand that's part of what she's thinking about. But just wonderful things. The writer for this movie actually was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. And I think it is very original.
A very original film. It's not a movie that, you know, a lot of people would think of. And I know, looking at her, she did ever seen the show 6 Feet Under?
Yes.
She was the screenwriter for a couple of seasons on that show.
Okay, also had fantastic writing.
Yeah, great writing. And once again, kind of a very unusual story following the lives of this family that runs a funeral home.
Yeah, that was an interesting series. I watched that entire thing.
Yeah, I watched it too. My biggest complaint, I mean, we're going a little bit off topic, but complaint about that show is it's a little bit too soap opera-y for me. Like, everybody in that show is having an affair and cheating on somebody, and it just got a little bit tiresome, but I still like the show.
Yeah, had a lot of strengths.
And so other performances that stick out for you, we talked a lot about Patricia Clarkson mm-hmm. already. She was really good in that. I also liked Emily Mortimer in the film, because mm-hmm. in the whole movie, she's trying her darndest just to get the guy to open up, and she's the one that sort of realizes that more than anybody else, that he's got a problem, because, you know, the brother at the beginning is like, he's fine, just let him be, he wants to be alone, leave him alone. And so she's almost like a way, she's sort of prepared that, you know, he has that blow-up doll, and, you know, the brother's completely shocked, but she's more open to it because she's like, I figured he might be doing something like this.
You know, the thing I find really great about her character is that she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And you come to find out that, you know, I think the reason that it's a catalyst is because the brother's mother died in childbirth. So he is thinking, oh, my God, something could happen to her. You know, it's dangerous having babies. So he's freaking out about the fact that his sister-in-law might be at risk, which is so deeply kind. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something in the ordinary movie, it would be about, you know, his unspoken lust for his sister, like, you know, and it's not about that at all. It's very, family. It's very caring. And those things come across in sweet little ways that reveal themselves. I just think it makes the movie incredibly strong.
Yeah. And talking about, you know, the whole of a family and caring and acceptance, it was reading about, I guess this film, when it came out, received a lot of strong, favorable responses from Christian media. And they talk about how this can, you know, because, you know, he's part of the church, and when the church hears about this, they don't cast him out or throw him away like some other movies might, or like, you know, heathen or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're very open and just say, okay, we'll accept you. And they even throw a funeral service for her when she dies. And I think it does, you know, in some movies where they portray, you know, movies kind of go that route with Christianity or other religions where it's, you know, hearsay or that kind of thing. I think this movie, I thought, like, took a good approach where they're more positive, they're more open, they're going to help you. You know, they're not just going to abandon you in your time of need.
It's like the takes a village thing. Because even the scene where they have called 911 to help Bianca, someone calls ahead to the hospital so that when they get there, they treat it, you know, like an emergency and they are ready to perform. You know, it's acting, of course, but they still play along. But, you know, everybody has to help or it doesn't work.
And even in the scene when, you know, she's in the hospital and Grind Lars is back home and the women are there, you know, sewing and knitting. And he goes, you know, what do I do? He's like, you don't have to do anything. You know, this is a time of tragedy. We're here to help you in your time of need. If you need anything from us, just please let us know.
Yeah, we just sit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which also seemed like so small town, you know. Mm-hmm. Everyone comes and rallies and stays with you. And instead of hiding, you know, at that point, he's able to come out and sort of receive, which I think is huge. Mm-hmm.
And even in, like, you know, we talked about how the small, you know, the small townness, the small Midwestern townness of the movie, because it's supposed to take place in Wisconsin. It feels in a way, bear with me, this might be a little bit of a stretch, but a little bit like Fargo.
Oh, I think so, yes.
Yeah, where in that movie, all these, you know, even in the TV show, which I really like, all these gruesome crimes are happening. There's criminals killing people, you know, gruesome murders. And everybody, even the cops, like Margie, still has that Midwestern attitude.
You betcha.
Yeah, you betcha. Like even in the favorite scene in that movie when she captures him after the wood chipper scene. And, you know, she just like, and you did all this for what? For just a little bit of money. You know, there are more important things in life than a little bit of money, you know. It's just so such like a Midwestern kind of thing.
Yes. Something like practical advice. When Lars is reading to Bianca, he's actually reading from Don Quixote, which I think is a great little detail to put in there because Don Quixote was delusional.
Mm-hmm. And even when he's reading it from it, it reminded me a bit of, just because I just watched it, The Notebook, when he's always reading Walt Whitman.
Okay, yeah.
So we could now talk a little bit about the director, Craig Gillespie. This is the only film of his I've seen. I know he's directed two Disney movies. One came out last year, was like The Finest Hours. It's supposed to be about this true story about this daring Coast Guard rescue. And he did another kind of true story Disney film, Million Dollar Arm with John Hamm, about this guy that goes scouting in India for baseball players. And I know now he's coming out with a new film about Tonya Harding and that whole incident where she had the... paid the guy to break Nancy Kerrigan's leg, and Margot Robbie's in it. So have you seen any other films of his?
I haven't. You know, it's funny. We the show is about, you know, directors and their essential films. I'm not sure that I know. I don't really know that much about this director. But this movie itself, I think, is an essential film.
Yeah, I would say granted, I haven't seen those other films, but I would say that this would probably, even if I did see those, I probably would say this is his best.
Yeah, it's hard to make a movie like it, too. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you can get that sense of community. Maybe if you carried that theme to other movies, you could do it. But it'd be hard to make a Lars and the Real Girl 2.
Like maybe it's a mannequin this time. Or maybe it's the movie Mannequin.
Or it's about mannequins that order people online or something.
But with the director, I would say nothing is show-offy in this movie, but that's not a bad thing because it's just trying to tell the story. Like there's no interest, there's no kind of interesting camera angles or show-offy with the cinematography with long takes. There's no like kind of weird editing choices or anything to kind of show off like look at me where somebody else might, but this movie, I think if you did any of that, it would just be too weird and take away too much.
Yeah, I think he's sort of like Gavin Hood in that he puts the camera in a place and lets you focus on the people.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm getting close to my questions here. Is there anything I haven't talked about or discussed that you want to bring up now?
I did use this in class once, and I asked this question, and whenever I make everybody I know watch this, oh, you've never seen this? Oh, you've got to see this movie. And I always ask, who's the real girl? Is it Bianca? Is it his sister-in-law? Is it Patricia Clarkson? Or is it Margot?
That's an interesting choice because she doesn't look like Margot at all, because Margot's got blonde hair and she's a bit skinnier, and you know, and then Mortimer says, you know, Bianca's a big girl.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think she's just trying to make him feel a little bit sorry, you know, because
right.
I have to lift her because she's a bit heavy. But I think, you know, she looks a little bit like Emily Mortimer because they both have the dark hair. So, but like you said, there's no like secret love he has for the sister or anything. So maybe it's his mother. We don't know. But I think that's what's interesting.
Yeah. I just wonder, everybody has a different answer for that too. Mm-hmm. Each one of those women, including Bianca, has something essential that the other ones don't. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a relationship with each one of those people, but they're not similar. You know, what he's able to reveal to the doctor is mm-hmm. not at all what he's able to say to his sister-in-law. Mm-hmm. And his relationship with the sister-in-law is nothing sexual or predatory or romantic.
Because mm-hmm. he even says in the thing is like, you know, she wants to be friendly and hug everyone, and she's got to realize that not everyone wants to be hugged.
Yeah.
Know? And even because there's a lot of like cringy scenes in this movie, you're like, oh God, you know. Uh-huh. And then one of the scenes is when she's always asking him to come to dinner, and he's always like, I got to do stuff, or he's just very quiet. And the scene where she finally gets him to come to dinner, and he's like, no, no, no. And then she keeps like, come on, come on. And then she like pushes him, and then he falls down on the ground.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God.
And she physically tackles him. Yeah. Yeah, to try to get him to come in. But, you know, he does eventually come in.
And then he hardly eats anything.
Yeah.
Like his plate's completely full. It's like, oh, that was delicious.
I like the ending too.
Yeah, it's, you know, very sweet where, you know, he finally asks, you know, Margot, she's been, you know, it's clear that she likes him so many times. And even when she went with the other guy, that was just kind of to try to distract herself from him. He finally says, you want to go for a walk? That, you know, and she has this great smile on her face. It's finally that they're going to end up together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a nice way to end, too, because he was also able to ask somebody out. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't going to be that she ended up having to do all the work because he was still kind of shy and withdrawn and needed to be drawn out. He was out mm-hmm. of his shell. Yeah. I just thought it was it's a heartwarming movie.
Good movie. I mean, very sweet even, but I mean, people might think this is a smutty movie or a dirty movie or thing because it's a love doll, but it's not like that at all.
It isn't. But it's hard to sell because, you know, the minute you tell people it's about a guy and a mm-hmm. blow up doll, they're like, okay, why are you asking me to watch this?
I remember like hearing about this the first time. I was like, why would Gosling need a blow up doll? He's Ryan frickin' Gosling.
It's a nice role for him, though, because mm-hmm. it's totally different from all the other ones. Mm-hmm. That's why people like Mary Dutter, who love Ryan Gosling, you say, wow, well, Laura's in The Real Girl. And they say, oh, I haven't seen that one. You're thinking, wow, well, you think you like Ryan Gosling now.
Yeah. All right, then. The last question I'll have is just tell us a little bit about the classes you teach.
Well, in the spring, I will be teaching American Cinema Online. And then in the classroom, I will be teaching Intro to Film and World Cinema.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about Lars and the Real Girl, directed by Craig Gillespie. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
Right. For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, those are nice, huh? And they're not real, so they'll last forever.